and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, May 15, 2023. President Salva Kiir says justice and accountability must be established in South Sudan.
We want to establish the truth as the basis for reconciliation and healing after the violence and destruction imposed upon our people.
And authorities in the Greater Pibor administrative area say thousands of families have no food.
Last week, I walked to all counties in the Greater Pibor area, including Patet, Lokongole, and Gurmuk. What I saw there is difficulty. The people are suffering.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Loud explosions rattled Khartoum today as the Sudanese capital degenerated further into anarchy, with hospitals, banks, shops and wheat silos ransacked by looters. Despite an agreement reached at truce talks in Saudi Arabia to allow residents to leave the fighting, they huddled in their homes amid shortages of food and basic supplies, power blackouts, communication outages and runaway inflation. Today marked the one-month anniversary of the fighting between Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and his deputy, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who leads the paramilitary rapid support forces. The animosity between the two leaders remains clear. Dagalo, known as Himiti, dismissed rumors that he had been killed or injured. Burhan declared he was freezing the RSF's assets, while Dagalo threatened in an audio recording that the army chief would be brought to justice and hanged in a public square. Burhan sacked the acting interior minister, Hanan Ahmed Mohammed Omar, today, a day after he dismissed the governor of the central bank. With reliable information scarce, the death toll ranged from 676 to around 1,000 people. About 200,000 have fled into neighboring countries, and more than 700,000 have been displaced inside Sudan, triggering a humanitarian crisis that threatens to destabilize the region. An estimated third of the population was already dependent on aid. Signatories of the South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement have begun a four-day conference on transitional justice mechanism in the capital, Juba. The theme of the conference, Building a South Sudan Model for Transitional Justice Systems. The parties to the revitalized peace agreement are behind schedule in forming a commission for truth, reconciliation and healing as required by the 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
President Kiir says South Sudan's 2013 and 2016 conflict led to the violations of human rights. He says he is committed to ensure transitional justice mechanisms are established to hold perpetrators of abuses accountable.
In order for us to consolidate peace and be able to conduct credible, free and fair elections in our country, we must enact the laws for the establishment of these mechanisms. We want to establish the truth as the basis for reconciliation and healing after the violence and destruction imposed upon our people and country by the two unjustified internal conflicts.
The Transitional Government of National Unity was supposed to establish a Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, an independent hybrid court, and a Compensation and Reparations Authority. Mr. Kiir says discussions on the proposed hybrid court will be held at a later date. According to Chapter 5 of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement, the Transitional Government of National Unity was to set up a system of accountability to investigate and prosecute individuals who violated international law and applicable laws of South Sudan during the start of the violence in 2013.
We are not shying away from the establishment of the hybrid court for South Sudan, which is part of Chapter 5 of the Agreement on Transitional Justice and Accountability. When the time comes for the enactment of the bill for the hybrid court for South Sudan, the Ministry of Justice and Constitutional Affairs, which is charged with the responsibility to trigger the implementation of these mechanisms in collaboration with the African Union, as is stipulated in the agreement, will update us accordingly.
South Sudan's first vice president, Riek Machar, says discussions on the transitional justice mechanisms are long overdue. He stressed the need for accountability for abuses committed during the conflict.
Peace without justice always do not last, but peace with justice lasts. And this chapter is now trying to come up. We were supposed to have tackled this chapter in the first or just 3 months after the transitional government was established.
The resolutions of the conference will be included into a draft bill for establishment of the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing, as well as a Compensation and Reparations Authority. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Authorities in South Sudan's Greater Pibor administrative area say a looming hunger in the area could lead to starvation. The National Minister for Humanitarian Affairs says the government is working with UN's World Food Programme and other aid agencies to provide relief food to families struck in Greater Pibor administrative area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has details from Bor.
Sabila Joseph, the Greater Pibor Administrative Area's Agriculture Minister, says she fears families could face acute food insecurity in the area. Sabila is urging humanitarian agencies to support families who need food in the Greater Pibor Administrative Area.
Last week I walked to all counties in the Greater Pibor Area, including Patet, Lokongole and Gurmuk. What I saw there is difficulty. The people are suffering. The women, children, and lactating mothers have no food. This is the reason why we, as the leaders of the people in the administration, are worried and call for help.
Albino Akol Atak, South Sudan's humanitarian affairs minister, says millions of people across the country face hunger this year due to impacts of climatic change, including flooding and drought.
So I'm aware that Bibor is one of those areas that are affected, and this is why all of you have been hearing that Bibor is one of the areas that we covered in our activities of pre-positioning of food supplies, because we know that in the rainy seasons is one of the areas that will be blocked.
This week, the South Sudan government contributed $1.5 million to the World Food Program to help it respond to emergency situations in the country. Minister Atak says his ministry is working with humanitarian agencies to address needs of those affected in Greater Pibor administrative area.
This is a contribution of the government towards the WFP so that we boost its ability to provide food to people of South Sudan. And of course, as the member of UN, we are obliged to contribute to that organization that they do their job. As I said, in this year alone, 2023, we have 9.4 million people who are food insecure.
Adeyinka Badejo, World Food Programme's Deputy Country Director in South Sudan, admits Greater Pibor administrative area is facing extreme levels of hunger, adding that his office will arrange for humanitarian assistance in the area.
This assistance includes cereals, pulses, salt and cooking oil, and distributions have been ongoing and are continuing over the next 2 months. Food has been prepositioned in the GPAA to ensure that there will be a continuous supply of humanitarian food assistance throughout the rainy season, especially when roads become difficult to pass.
Badejo says the WAP is facing funding issues which could affect its efforts to scale up humanitarian response for addressing the influxes of people fleeing violence in Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Zambia, where more than 300 editors, journalists and media stakeholders met in the Zambian capital, Lusaka, for the second Africa Media Convention to debate the future of freedom, justice and peace on the continent. The meeting highlights this year's theme of the World Press Freedom Day, shaping a future of rights, freedom of expression as a driver of all other rights. Kati Short reports from Lusaka.
The second African Media Convention is being hosted by the Southern Africa Editors Forum and the 16-member Media Liaison Committee in Zambia. It's also being held under the auspices of a steering committee and subcommittees drawn from media stakeholders from UNESCO and the African Union Commission. The first such convention was held in Arusha, Tanzania, in 2022. Southern Africa Editors Forum Chairperson William Ponda commended Zambia for enhancing media freedoms by repealing restrictive laws like one that penalized defamation of the president and another that imposed the death penalty.
Over the past year, we have witnessed the reopening of closed radio stations and newspapers in Zambia, among other positive media reforms.
Speaking earlier at the convention, Zambia's chief government spokesperson and information minister, Chushi Kasanda, emphasized the need for journalists to enjoy their rights as the fourth estate in a democracy, along with the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government.
Indeed, the people of Africa deserve accurate information. They deserve factual information. This is what will empower them to participate in the affairs of their countries and the continent at large. On the other hand, the media too deserve freedom. They deserve editorial independence. They deserve safe to carry out their work.
Meeting participants also discussed favorable working conditions for journalists, including inclusive environments for women media workers. They also considered the sharing of revenues by digital companies to support ethical journalism and information, the influence of artificial intelligence on the media, and a proposal to make press freedom and protections part of the African peer review mechanism.
Most governments are using adverts as weapon to curtail freedom of the press, freedom of the media across the continent. Governments are the main advertisers. And when they withdraw their adverts from private media, automatically they are squeezing them to become kneeling. This is an area where we need to have a special eye to make sure the media industry is devising the mechanism, is looking for new alternative sources of revenue.
And African Union Head of Communication, Ms. Winnie Musabayana, said the media plays a critical role in a democracy.
Through its communication policies, strategies and practices, the African Union supports journalists' rights to seek, receive and impart information. It recognizes that media play an important role in ensuring the respect of freedom of expression, in promoting the free flow of information and ideas, in assisting people to make informed decisions, and in facilitating and strengthening democracy.
The event also marks 30 years since the UN General Assembly proclaimed May 3rd as an International Day for Press Freedom. The decision followed a recommendation by African editors, senior journalists and media educators who met in Windhoek, Namibia at a UNESCO seminar in 1991. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese analyst says General Johnston Oloing has surrendered to President Kiir. Find out why after the break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The leader of the SPLM-IO splinter group, the Agwilek militia, and the senior commander of the SPLM-IO Kitgwang faction, General Johnston Oloing, returned to Juba on Sunday. Some South Sudanese analysts have expressed mixed views on Oloing's return. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayer reports from Juba.
Abraham Kualnyun, a professor of political science at the University of Juba, says Oloing acted in a manner of what he called complete surrender following the current violence in Sudan.
That means his base of strength is almost on fire. And he has seen into it that by the end of the day, he will not be able to launch attack against the government. And at the same time, he will not be able to maintain the war with the government. So the only way is surrender. So I could call this a surrender because there is no another alternative.
General Oloing rebelled in 2015 and joined Riek Machar's SPLA-IO. He then switched sides and later formed a splinter group of the SPLM-IO known as the Kitgwang Declaration, together with General Simon Gadwijidwal. In January 2022, the SPLA-IO Kitgwang faction signed a peace agreement in Khartoum with President Kiir's government. At the same time, the Agwilek forces led by General Oloing also signed a separate agreement with the government. Kual says Oloing is a person who cannot be trusted.
In fact, somebody who had ever not been so maybe specific on whatever the thing that he want, because you could see into it that if he has been with the government, with IO and out of the IO, with the government now, then you could see into it that such a person who doesn't have a concrete stand, then there are chances that if what was done to him to come and maintain him in Juba here in terms of his personal logistics, then the chances of him going back to the bush are 100% very high.
Jok Maduri Jok, a lecturer of anthropology at a U.S. university, says the reasons for Oloing's return to Juba and joining the government are unclear.
What is the government going to offer him? Has he abandoned his cause? Is he simply coming back as an ordinary citizen by his own declaration that he has come back because he doesn't want to fight anymore? Or has he come back through some kind of a deal with the government of President Kiir? Those things we do not know. So just on the face of it, I think it looks like this is somebody who has surrendered and decided that enough is enough with war, because he can no longer maintain his war, given that his backers in Khartoum are now in war of their own.
Oloing was received by President Kiir's security advisor, Tut Galwak, upon arrival at Juba International Airport. Jok calls on the government to integrate Oloing forces into South Sudan's People's Defense Forces.
There is always a concern when you have multitudes of armed groups that are not under any single command. What it looks like is that Juba is going to have yet another military outfit that is not under the National Army. So you have the forces belonging to various former militias or former warring parties, each one of them maintaining their own independent existence with their own arms. And I think It doesn't bode well for the security of the city and the country at all.
Since 2013, the government of South Sudan has signed an agreement with the Cobra faction of David Yau Yau, National Movement for Change, allied to former Western Equatorial State Governor Joseph Mbagazi Bakasoro, as well as SPLA-IO of Riek Machar, among others. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
The world celebrated International Mother's Day yesterday with a call by the United Nations Population Fund for gender equality and adequate health care for all mothers. The UNFPA says many mothers do not get support they need from their loved ones. In Kenya, we look at the life of two mothers, one who has a career and one who does not. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Mother's Day celebrates the role of women with children, their maternal and family bonds, and their influence in society. But gender inequality can keep mothers and women out of workforce and schools, makes them vulnerable to conflict and violence, and denies them the right to make decisions about their own bodies and health. Taking time out to care for children slows down a woman's career progression. Kenti Stikolo is a career mother who has transitioned to different careers throughout her life. She shares her story on how she moved from being a teacher and eventually into public relations.
I moved into research. So I worked for the International Laboratory for Research on Animal Diseases as a research technician. And this was a fairly easy career to mix with having children, because I'd just be on the bench, I do my science, and then get back home.
Worldwide, women earn 77 cents for every dollar made by men. The result is a lifetime of income inequality between men and women. As women become mothers, the income and opportunity gaps widen between the two. Tikolo says, as a mother, she had to make decisions that did not suit everyone.
I did at one point go to the University of Stirling in the UK, where I stayed for a year, and that was a tough time for the family. The children were pretty young, and I had to make the decision to take them to boarding school. That was a tough decision. And yet it was necessary, because I needed to immerse myself in the new career that I had moved into, public relations.
Mothers all over the world go to great lengths to make sure that their children get education, which is key to ending the cycle of poverty and opening up equal opportunities for boys and girls. Monica Chemtai is not a career mother. She lives in the village in Mount Elgon, western part of Kenya. She says life in the village is not easy.
It is very difficult, but as a mother, you must be very strong for your children, and you want your kids to feel good. You need to see through those who are in school and make sure they get all they need. The kind of job we do on the farm is very difficult, but the produce that I get from the farm really help me to feed the children, pay for their school needs as well.
Despite the challenges, Chemtai says she enjoys her stay in the village. Chemtai is proud of her accomplishments. Her daughter has earned a master's degree. In African culture, mothers are ever overwhelmed with house chores, including taking care of children and the whole family. Tikola advises mothers to choose what is best for them.
Mothers ought to know that none of us is the same as the other. And what I would encourage is that go by your instincts.
Caring for children, cooking, cleaning, and other unpaid work that keep households and economies running routinely falls on women's shoulders. The data shows that women carry out at least 2.5 times more unpaid work than men. However, the work is often not valued or counted. But it is on this International Year celebration, and families around the world have the opportunity to wish the women in their lives a happy Mother's Day. Reporting for viewers, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
That's all we prepared for you on this Monday. We now leave you with Mawa and the song Mata Kore.
de ya mama matakore nia de ya oze de mama matakore nia de ya oze de ya mama matakore nia de ya oze de lele Dunia de fogo la kabata, dunia de fogo wajagelba, dunia de fogo suata, lakini bes kankoreja.
We've been listening to Mawa and the song Matakore. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Audrius Regis, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2003, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or North Korea, withdrew from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and restarted its nuclear weapons program. 3 years later, the DPRK conducted its first nuclear test. In an effort to force the DPRK to end its unlawful ballistic missile and weapons of mass destruction programs, the international groups, including the United Nations and the European Union, imposed on North Korea a series of economic and financial sanctions, broadening and tightening them as the nuclear tests escalated. In need of funds to support its nuclear program, the DPRK used the services of numerous individuals to evade sanctions and to obtain money to pay for embargoed goods. For the past 6 years, the DPRK has also engaged in the theft of virtual currency and fraud schemes. In late April, the U.S. Department of State, through its Transnational Organized Crime Rewards Program, announced a reward offer of up to $5 million for information leading to the arrest and/or conviction of North Korean national Sim Hyun-sop. Separate reward offers of up to $500,000 each were offered for information leading to the arrests and/or convictions of Chinese nationals Han Lin Lin and Chen Guming. The United States Department of the Treasury has also sanctioned Sim Hyun-sop plus Wu Hi-hui and Cheng Hung-man. Wu is an over-the-counter virtual currency trader based in China who facilitated the conversion of virtual currency stolen by DPRK actors to fiat currency. Chang, a Hong Kong-based over-the-counter virtual currency trader, worked with Wu to transfer payment to companies in exchange for virtual currency. The DPRK's use of illicit facilitation networks to access the international financial system and generate revenue using virtual currency for the regime's unlawful weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile programs directly threatens international security, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Brian E. Nelson. The United States and our partners are committed to safeguarding the international financial system and preventing its use in the DPRK's destabilizing activities, especially in light of the DPRK's 3 launches of intercontinental ballistic missiles this year alone. If you have information on these men, please contact U.S. investigators at +1-520-442-0703 on WhatsApp or Telegram. If you are located outside of the United States, you may also visit the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. If in the United States, you can also contact the local FBI offices in your city.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.